Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, listening audience. Thank you for tuning in to Talk Straight and being a part of a national dialogue designed for proactive change. This is your host, Reverend Dr. Reuben Dockery. I'm grateful again to engage each and every one of you in very important conversation. I need your help as I endeavor to take this message and the conversation we share on air to targeted cities and urban areas across America with the hope and desire to improve the quality of lives by engaging communities and proactive strategies. You can be of great help by going to our webpage, www.bfcinstitute.com. Click on the donation tab or the contact us tab and find ways that you can assist us by either purchasing our items or just making a donation on our secure PayPal site. If you are a business or someone who would like to make a corporate level contribution and you would like more information, please give me a call at 615-498-4669 or send me an email at bfcinstitute@gmail.com. That's bfcinstitute@gmail.com, or give us a call at 615-498-4669. We are glad to share with you and provide you all the necessary information to help you make the decision to support us in our traveling lecture series.
Perhaps one of the most important conditions to maintaining unity among a group of people is trust. However, in order for trust to exist, there must be some basis of informing the members of this group what the common identity, the vision, and even the focus of prosperity for the group is. The latter is best achieved by way of cultural affinity and even assimilation into a unified thought and way of living. What recent history has told us, though, is that there's been a major erosion in the trust within traditional African-American communities, neighborhoods. The erosion is most manifest when we see the social ills that are prevalent and they're portrayed in the national media, social media, and other platforms. Join me tonight as we discuss some ideas of how to restore healthy, productive values and tenets that will help bolster what's now becoming a new urban America. Our topic tonight, the missing piece of the urban American puzzle. And I want to emphasize that we must be honest about the fact that today urban America is very different than what it was 100 years ago, 20 years ago. There's something that is happening in our communities, in our neighborhoods, that has brought about a major change. It's July the 8th, 2021. You're listening to Talk Straight. This is your host, Reverend Dr. Reuben Dockery. Grateful for everyone that will join us, those of you who have. And we look forward to engaging you tonight. 657-383-0944. That is the number to call into the studio tonight and to join our live dialogue. Again, that number is 657-383-0944. Love to engage you. Again, we're speaking from the topic, the missing piece of the urban American puzzle. Indeed, urban America still exists today. And that was a time where it was very clear as to who was there. And you'll learn that it wasn't just African Americans who populated and lived in urban America. Wasn't always. No. But that was a transition. The text tonight is found in Job, the 14th chapter, and the 7th verse. I think this is a very important consideration here, particularly in context to our topic here. Job 14:7 says, "For there is hope of a tree, if it be cut down, that it will sprout again, and that the tender branch thereof will not cease." That's good news. That's very good. Some people might say that it's too idealistic doctrine. Let me hit it just one more time. For there is hope of a tree that is cut down, that it will sprout again, and that the tender branch thereof will not cease. How do you take something that was intentionally destroyed, hewn, cut down, decimated, and look for it to sprout again, to live, have life, to function? How do you do that? The missing piece of the American, urban American puzzle. Perhaps one of the most important conditions, as we said, to maintaining that trust or maintaining the group is trust, right? Unfortunately, things have happened such that that trust has been removed. Now, I made reference earlier to the fact that African Americans didn't always populate urban American neighborhoods and communities as a majority population. Yes. In fact, historically, around the early 1900s, there were droves of Europeans who came to America. Okay. Well, let's consider it. After the Civil War, industrial expansion brought major changes to American society. Increasingly, the U.S. became an urban area, and cities grew not only in terms of their population, but also their size. You had skyscrapers. You had these things that push cities upward now, people living in tall buildings, as well as you had transportation systems that caused cities growth and expansion geographically to expand and to widen. A major influence of urban population was the unexpected mass migration to the United States. And this started and continued for two decades in the early 20th century, the 1900s, as I was making reference earlier. You see, there were dueling interests at this point and beyond that. That was the dueling interest between urbanized neighborhoods, people that lived there, poor whites and some blacks, right, particularly up north. And they were competing with the interests of African Americans that were fleeing the South, especially within a certain period of that, of the mid-20th century there. And the question was who basically would be able to populate or exist or live there. You know, with World War II, you had many soldiers went off to fight the war, and those that survived came back and said, hey, y'all taking our place. But then you had Europeans who came over looking for a better life as well. So there was some dueling interest there. But for the African Americans, they wanted to flee the South and the plantation system that they were accustomed to after the Reconstruction era, because they were looking for the American dream. Okay? Now, ongoing industrialization and what has become known as urbanization left its mark on how people spent their day-to-day life. You know, you probably go down south now, and typically it used to be real slow. But there are a lot of urban influences coming to southern cities. They consider it virgin territory for growth and expansion. And in fact, federal programs that are geared toward revitalizing historically urban areas now, dollars are being spent in southern cities, and efforts are being made by developers to move and to expand that in places that used to be country, rural, infrastructure, not set up for no large urban population, no huge thick density and what have you. But we see it happen. This process can be labeled as gentrification. And we're talking about the missing piece in the puzzle. Now that people that for decades, in fact, families, generations lived in certain areas, what they're finding is that those folks, once the areas built up and is revitalized, they can't afford to live there anymore. They have to find somewhere else. This is the cause of consternation and frustration, anxiety and anger for a lot of people. They feel like they've been used, abused, misplaced. Understandably so in many cases. So it begs the question, how well did things like the social organization and political entities and what have you, as well as public schools, how well did they prepare these individuals to be able to thrive, to exist, and to be members of society in a way that they wasn't looking for anyone to do anything for? They were able to do it for themselves. That's the question that it raises. But in around 1870, the almanac suggests that there were only two American cities with a population of more than 500,000, half of a million. But by the 1900s, as I mentioned, there were six of these cities to this day are very large in population. New York, Chicago, and Philadelphia. Of course, there are more now, right? These cities boast over a million inhabitants, each one of them, and they are large to this day. Now, roughly 40% of Americans lived in cities, and the number began to climb. We talk about dating back to the 1870s, 1900s, and beyond. What we saw is much of the urbanization occurred in industrial regions. That's interesting, such as the Northeast and the Midwest. Now, we call them flyover states now, where certain places where there's a bunch of country land and people have large pieces and parcels of land and what have you. But in the urban areas where everybody's rough, forced on top of one another, shoulder to shoulder, and hustle and bustle, you understand. And that's not necessarily anything wrong with that. Not necessarily anything wrong with that. But with industrialization became opportunities to create jobs and things of that nature and industries that attracted people. You know, there's a professor, what is his name? Professor Love. I'm going to get his name right. He's at Tennessee State University. Did an excellent job of writing a book about the transition of many former slaves or people after slavery ended in 1865 in the rural counties that surrounded Nashville proper, the urban center, and how these artisans and skilled folk came to the city for opportunities. Very similarly, when they left the South, they went to other places looking to be able to expand those opportunities. Atlanta experienced a rapid economic recovery in the last quarter of the century. And Los Angeles, California, became a boom town in around 1880s or so. But this was due to the Southern Pacific and the Santa Fe Railroads, which trade, export, transit, and everything else. And it created this desire, this interest, if you will, this monster for people to heavily populate one area. Now, because of the birth rate in the United States began to decline in the late 19th century, urban growth reflected a more internal migration within the U.S. People were leaving, again, those rural areas, those farms and small towns in order to go to the larger cities and to take advantage of opportunities. Now, even though since that time, that around the, I'll say the 60s or 70s or so, poor whites began to advance and do well that were in urban areas, and they began to move to suburbs, and they began to build gated communities even. They began to prosper. That left somebody there, and that left African Americans historically. And that wasn't a bad thing, because there were very prominent African Americans in urban areas who did quite well, right? But over time, bring us up to 2021, and you ask the question, what happened? What is the missing piece of the puzzle that caused generations of people now, they when they grow, they'd be rolling over, say, man, what happened to the old hood that I grew up in? There used to be a place that I revered, right? What is it about it? What's happened? Well, two things are going on now. One is being gentrified, and some people are being run off, and then others are coming in and redefining it. That's the missing piece. And I see and understand why so many young folk are saying, listen, it's not fair, we're losing out. But here's an argument that can be made. If you focus your attention and your energy on not pointing the finger blame or not looking for someone to hold accountable for where you are and focus on taking yourself where you choose to be, guess what? Life could be much better for you. It'd be an interesting experiment to see. The singing duo called KC and JoJo, their song was used as the major soundtrack of a very popular movie and very interesting movie where you had a lot of African American comedians that were in it. Eddie Murphy, Bernie Mac, Martin Lawrence, folk like that. And basically, this song was powerful. Just for a second, 657-383-0944. That's the number. You're listening to Talk Show. This is your host, Reverend Dr. Lumina. The phone lines are open. We're listening to KC and JoJo. Life. Some people feel like I got a rough deal in life. Just for a second.
Yes, sir. That's what's up.
How's the family doing?
Good.
Great. Well, we're glad to have you. Glad to have you in with us tonight. And we got our gentleman out of St. Louis, Missouri, 4600, is joining us as well. Welcome there, St. Louis.
What do you say, Ruben? God bless America.
All the time. Listen, some people complain about it, but guess what? Now, it's kind of rough when you leave there and you go somewhere else and you realize, man, they ain't doing it like they're doing over in the U.S. one. Well, so, gentlemen, we're talking about this missing piece of that puzzle, and particularly for urban America. And I, on Facebook, I posted a few questions, and this is germane to our discussion tonight. You know, we can say a lot of things, but I believe it would be helpful if people answer these questions. Is the African-American subgroup the only group of people that have lived in populated urban American neighborhoods? Because when you look at it, you ask yourself, if they were not, how did they get out? Outcasts know right here there's a very historic cemetery right in the heart of the hood. You know what I'm talking about, don't you, Outcasts?
Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, right over there in North Nashville, man.
You're right.
And it used to be nothing but poor Jews over there. Go ahead, I'm sorry, go ahead. What'd you say?
Nothing.
There are parts of the city in St. Louis. I understand that there was some sort of if my memory of the record is correct, that was historically a period where they would bring slaves through there and auction them off, and that was near the downtown Broadway area. Is that your recollection, St. Louis?
Yeah. It's down at the old courthouse. Blacks, whites, yeah. Indians, they went down there and bought some property.
Right. So it begs the question, over time, what happened to the opportunity for those who nobody's arguing that happened to them and that was a bad thing, right? But when we look at it in 2021, the question that when we grab our babies outcast and we tell them, I hear you. Here's what we got to do to move on now, and this is what you got to consider. Those are the questions that I think would be helpful in the answer. And the other question is, how did African Americans get left to deal with the socioeconomic challenge that we see every day? Black on black,
well,
crime, things of that nature. Go ahead,
well, some took advantage of the opportunity. Some, for whatever reason, did not. There's a lot of black businesses from 1600 through 1865. They don't teach you that.
No, you don't get a lot of.
Thank you.
Exactly. You don't hear a lot.
Yeah, they talk about this critical race theory, talking about demonizing white folks. Hell, let's teach the Bible in school. That's critical.
Well, I got a good one for you, St. Louis. I got a good one for you going back to the 1600s. Why don't you go and get that black slave owner named Anthony Johnson? He was a slave owner. Which blacks owned slaves here in the United States of America at a point. But now you know what happened with Anthony Johnson's slave. He was a black slave. Guess what he did? He ran Anthony Johnson, who went to a white slave owner. Now what did they tell you about Negro doing that period of time in 1600?
Well, you know, Anthony Johnson acquired over 900 acres of land for sponsoring immigrants to the country. That's what was going on back during that time. Him and other blacks.
Wow.
He over 900 acres of land. He got 50 acres for every immigrant that he sponsored to the country.
Yeah. He was a black man.
They don't talk about yes. And they talk about Indians. The Seminole was some of your most vicious slave catchers. And bounty hunters.
Well, so I guess that's I guess there's a perspective to this thing, gentlemen, in terms of when you look at it historically, right? Now there were different – chattel slavery was very different than indentured servitude, right, where you can pay your way.
No, the chattel slavery in the Creek Nation was like was not indentured servitude. If you was a slave, your child was a slave. It's among the Creek and other Indians.
Okay.
Tribes.
Now, I'm talking about as practiced by slave
white.
Owners, particularly slave owners in the United States.
The white slave owners, they learned it from the Africans.
Okay.
Chattel slavery went on the continent of Africa.
Well, my point is, I'm not arguing that. My point is very simply, there was a difference in being able to buy yourself out of servitude through arrangement and being told you're born there and that's where we expect you to die as our servant. In fact, we treat you like a piece of property, not a human. That was the
Slaves got paid. If they didn't get paid, how was they able to buy their loved ones?
Again, that's what we cross over into indentured servitude. Where
no, they were slaves. They were not indentured servants. They were slaves.
They were allowed to
have their business. They were allowed to perform their businesses and entrepreneurship at night when they wasn't working the fields, and they acquired enough money to buy their loved ones.
I think you're talking, again, that's exactly what the definition of the indentured system was. However, in chattel slavery, and this is the one I'm speaking of in reference to what was defined by John Hope Franklin as well as Jerome Bennett, where they were seasoned to behave and act like animals. In fact, Willie Lynch made it very clear about how to best
Willie Lynch wasn't real. You know, talk about Franklin. Jesse Franklin was the first Supreme Court justice here in the United States. Black man. He was black.
I got you. What I'm speaking of right now, when we talk about this missing piece in Native America, is that there is some information that has been missed out on, and there are some of us who still populate heavily urban American centers and cities. We've been it over summer. We've seen the expression of the frustration, the anger and anxiety. And in effect, OutKast, all they did was to tear up their own neighborhood that they have to live in. You see what I mean?
This has been an ongoing conversation, and I really like to indulge in it, you know, each time that it come up. But at the end of the day, I can't point my finger at the white man and say, well, hell, you killing my people when my own people are killing my people.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, we cross this road a lot of times. And each time I enjoy the conversation. When it comes to pointing fingers, when it comes to the blacks being left out, the point is this. St. Louis hit it on the money. Some blacks took advantage of the opportunity. Some didn't. Look at what's going on in Tennessee right now. You know, kids coming out of high school, they give them 2 free years of college. How many black children are taking advantage of it? The majority of them that I run across, they're not interested in going to college. But when you have more whites going to college now than blacks, it's a problem. I'm sorry, I'll go ahead.
No, you're making your point. What the data suggests.
You know, going back to what St. Louis said, some take advantage of it and some don't. Another statement that was made, instead of pointing a finger, no. Go and look in the mirror and check yourself. You know, because this is where it began at. Now, my mother only had a 7th grade education. Yeah, my father, he probably had a 5th grade education, but that didn't stop me from furthering my education. I didn't use it as a crutch. I looked at me and said, hey, let me get a hold of myself. Let me move on. Now, we can go back. We can talk about slavery and this and that, but we're going to end up right back over there in Africa as St. Louis City. You know, we're going to end right back up over there. But here in America, what we are doing is pointing the finger at the white man. Well, doggone. St. Louis just said about the doggone Indians what they were doing to you. Let me shut up.
Okay. That's St. Louis, were you going to say something? Let me yell before I tell you.
Yeah, you're right. The Creek Indians, when Chickasaw, their Jim Crow was worse than that in Louisiana. Mm. Amongst their, and Lincoln did not free no slaves. Lincoln was the commander in chief, and you had slaves that fled to the Union lines. And slave catchers could have came and got them, but they declared them as contraband. They declared the slaves as contraband. And what Lincoln did when he was the commander in chief of the army, he said, let them go. Those are the ones he freed. He couldn't free the slaves in states that had seceded, nor could he free slaves that were slaves of the Indian nations. Matter of fact, they didn't free theirs until 1866, April starting and as far as July. And some of them, like the Chickasaw, and the Chickasaw, Choctaw, Cherokee, Creek, they demanded that if you want us to give up our property, you're going to pay us for it. Think about that. When the Japanese was interned, Congress paid them for the businesses that they lost. They lost their property. So that's what the Indian tribes did. And actually, the last payment to some of the groups was in 1952. And people going around saying that the U.S. government paid Indian tribes reparations. They didn't pay them no reparations. They paid them based on the 1866 treaty where the U.S. government paid them to release their slaves.
Okay. So you were making reference to an incident.
But see, going back you know, which I'm familiar with what St. Louis is saying, see. But the thing is this. When they talk about slavery, they only talk about the whites here in America only had slaves. No, those Indians do. You see, they're not going to put everything in a history book. This is why we must take it upon ourselves to go out and seek other knowledge. What did Jesus say? Seek, you shall find. You will find a lot of things if you seek. But if you do not seek, you will run, you a chronologically grown man or a chronologically grown woman running around talking about the white man had Negroes in slavery. Hell, the mean you too. But again, and I'll be quiet, this is part of the history that they're not taught. It's part of time.
You know what they do, just like you said, the white man, they put it out there like that. But factually, about 3% of whites on the eve of the Civil War, only about 3% of the white population had anything to do with slavery. And we don't know what percentage of blacks, but we're going to find out.
Okay. So I was going to make reference to something you said, St. Louis. And one of the landmark Supreme Court cases was the Scott or Dred Scott decision in 1857. And it really set the tone for the frustration and the friction that led to the Civil War when it kicked off in later years, in 1860, 1861, because there was this big divide. And I think it was actually in Missouri, in southern Missouri and northern Missouri, on whether or not a slave should be able to run there, be free, right? Or on one side, be maintained in slavery. In fact, there were many of them after the Dred Scott decision that were returned to their slave owners, basically. But, yeah, I mean, interesting point.
Well, the Dred Scott decision was accurate. It was an accurate decision because just like illegals don't have any right to the Constitution, they're not citizens today.
Okay.
But the 14th Amendment changed that.
That's true. Now, there you go. Because the 14th Amendment it didn't exist then, of course, by that time, but the essence of the Fourth Amendment, the First Amendment, the Sixth Amendment and the Fifth Amendment did not exist for these human beings who were then slaves. So that's an issue.
Oh, that's because they weren't citizens. If you go to Ghana today, their constitution doesn't exist for you. Because you're not a citizen in their country.
I get what you're saying. And I guess the real conversation is how that came about, but that's not really what we're speaking of. And I don't want to get too lost in that.
And you know, another thing about the 14th Amendment, the 14th Amendment said anyone born, and it had to apply after the amendment was ratified. So those who was living when it was ratified, it didn't apply to them technically, because you can't grandfather laws back into history. So after those people died off, and then that was the last of them.
I would argue, though, that there's a lot of elements of the 14th Amendment that were revised from the 1857 case, though, particularly the language about who was born here or, you know, and how long you were here and that sort of thing. But, again, I don't want to get too lost in that.
Well, you know what? And one more thing before you go. It worked because Bill Cosby just won because of the 14th Amendment. It set procedure due process. Is the reason why come he? One of the reasons why come he won his case.
Okay. All right. Hold that thought. I wanted to, Bobby Lovett is the professor. I think he's retired now from Tennessee State University. Yeah, he's emeritus. He has emeritus status. He's the professor that wrote that very powerful book about the transition of various artisans to Nashville from places outside of Nashville proper before it became a metropolitan government there. But very interesting content there. Okay. Well, let me shift a little bit, gentlemen, and still you're listening to Talk Straight, and we're talking from the topic, the missing piece of the urban American puzzle. Now, some people don't like the classification of urban America, and I emphasize the fact that what made it urban is its density and the large population of people sharing a concentrated area. How do you get outcast? we're seeing it more now. How do you get people to see themselves as benefactors of the American dream as opposed to being stuck from a colorblind position? Now, and I'm not really talking about white so much now, because we see this more and more with my people, Afro-American people. And I don't want them to lose the heritage. I don't want them to lose appreciation and pride for Afrocentric values. I'm not suggesting that. But how do you get them to embrace the American dream and its basic opportunity to them?
Well, first of all, you have to deprogram them. You have to reprogram them to bring them to a point to where that they can actually see what's going on in America, what's holding me back, what's keeping me from this, what's keeping me from that. It starts within oneself. Deprogram. Now, you got chronically grown fucking men running around here, 60, 70 years old, on down to 40 or better, still blaming the white man. But I'm not getting anywhere. I'm not going to do this because the white man is not going to let me do it. Well, brother, did you finish high school? No, I'm going to get your GED. College doors are open. Now, you go in there and you get what you want. White man is not holding you back. It's not like during the period of time of slavery, they didn't allow them to read, didn't allow them to do that. You got to set up staff with the mouth in church and all that old crap. This is 2021. First, you have to deprogram them. You know, like being in the military, they go back and get deprogrammed. This is what needs to go on in our society today. A lot of deprogramming need to be happening. A lot of deprogramming need to, I mean, just bring it. And for number one, the best two people that I know, that I've been in conversation with, that can deprogram them is yourself in St. Louis. There are not enough of you in St. Louis's running around out here in society around young people. Get them old fools too. Shut up.
Well, isn't that something people have to want, though? I think you got a good point. But the reality is you can't make folks want what's best for them. And the noise, now it's interesting you say that, because you have people of a certain generation who've had their chance, missed it for whatever reason, right? And now they're turning around encouraging the earlier generation behind them to relive their frustration, their anger, and their missed opportunity. Why would you set some young person up like that? I mean, I just read where the state is trying to encourage people to come here, and their jobs now, opportunities for people that they having a hard time getting filled. You understand what I'm saying?
Yes, I do.
The reality is, now, let me just say, St. Louis, I hear the complaint, and I hear the claim of what happened yesterday. I get that. But the reality is, yesterday is gone. It'll never come back again. The only thing we have to take advantage of now, in the here and now, in this lifetime, is what's in front of us. And that's where I want to make sure people don't understand that because you tell someone out there that you've got to go ahead and put some work in, right, you've got to let go of your pain and your anger from the past, that you are talking against them because they're black. That's not a healthy mindset, I don't think. And, you know, I've been black all my life, so I know a little bit about being black, you understand.
People today can't complain about the past. They live today. They are living today. And even if it was so, it just would not be relegated to blacks only. Voting reform laws don't just affect blacks only. They affect everybody.
No. That's right.
So you can't complain. How are you going to complain about something that happened 100 years ago? And you don't even know if you have time. In a way, it happened. It happened to people. People say, well, the reason I ain't got nothing today is because my ancestors didn't leave me nothing. Well, hell, you got ancestors. You got grown adults. Parents today don't leave their kids nothing.
I agree.
Now, this is where our challenge comes in, gentlemen. We know that this is a reality, right? This is where our challenge comes in, and that is getting folks to understand that if you can choose to be stuck yesterday, but it won't get you anywhere in the future. That's our challenge. And again, as I said, you can't make people embrace that thought. But I read the first part of the monologue. We looked at Job 17 and 14 to 7, where it talked about a tree that was cut down that was hope, that it'll sprout again. It'll sprout again. So all hope ain't lost. All hope ain't lost.
You mentioned about the urban areas and regentrification.
Yes,
well,
sir.
You have to do that because you got to maintain a tax base that can support services that the city needs. But when you got elements in the city that's causing a lot of trouble and causes your public safety budget, which includes police, to be extremely high, and St. Louis is over 51% of the budget, entire budget, goes toward public safety, which includes police. Element is putting an undue burden on the city and others. So if where you live, the property value is so depleted and it is taking more services that's being provided to the area than that's being derived from taxes, well, then you got to get rid of it.
And that makes sense, right? The problem, though, largely is the fact that when the plans were made to revitalize and to place money in there and build it back up, the people that were not informed about it. Now, I'm going to tell you who I blame now. I'm going to tell you who I blame. And I'll use Nashville as an example. We've had Afro-American people in leadership on the state level, on the local, who should have informed everybody about these things. And then they could have been more participatory in planning. And I'm talking about over the last 40-some years here in Nashville. Right? But I suspect that that thing is true in other cities as well. You're from Memphis. Now, one thing I can say about Memphis, a fellow by the name of Charlie Williams and some of the other folks back there in Memphis, they were very well organized, and they got pretty much what they wanted in Memphis. You can't see that model so much here in Nashville, Davidson County. And that's not to throw anybody on the bus. It's just to say that if you're wondering where yours went, go ask the people you voted for to represent your interest. Where my stuff at? Is that a reasonable question to ask?
One thing that people don't realize is that cities don't rebuild cities. It's private dollars that rebuild cities. Cities may come in and offer some perks like tax, like TIFs, like tax incremental financing. But cities don't build. If you ain't got to haul enough money to pay your police, how you going to rebuild areas? So that's private dollars. Now, private dollars are not going to come into an area and invest where they can't receive a return on their investment. They ain't no doers. These people ain't fools. So what they try to do is get the federal government to come in and guarantee that you will get your investment back. And the federal government don't want to do that. And see, here's another thing. The federal government can't say, we're going to do this just for blacks. No, that's discrimination.
That is absolutely right. Now that's the point right there. Whoever comes and who wants to participate in the economic system, black, white, Hispanic, whatever, they have a right to it. Because you're right. The federal government can't just say that we're going to reserve this just for black people. You can't do that. That would be illegal as well. Pastor Wallace joins us here. Pastor, we're talking from the topic, the missing piece of the urban American puzzle. We've been trying to fix this puzzle and get it whole, but you know how you're doing a puzzle and you drop a piece somewhere, you don't know where you dropped, and you're trying to figure out how to, the puzzle ain't complete without it. You got 5,000 pieces to the puzzle, one of them gone. What is it, Pastor? What's that piece that, what do you think that is that we can help make urban America whole again?
Sounds like you got to keep searching.
Keep searching?
Keep searching for the truth.
Okay.
That's the only thing that's going to make it right.
Let me ask this question. Do you all think, we got Outcast on with us tonight. Glad to have you sitting there with us, as well as St. Louis. Do you all think it's fair if the natural piece of the puzzle is missing, right, the original piece, you think it's fair to go out and try to use the silhouette to carve out a new piece and put it in there and call it something else? Is that the real puzzle, Outcast? Do we have a real puzzle, man, or some mammy made?
I didn't hardly hear you, but I did want to comment on Memphis. Okay, you got 95 counties in the state of Tennessee.
Yes,
you have a larger black population in Memphis. At one point you had more people in Memphis than you had in these other 94 counties. Now, here's the kicker.
Right.
Davidson County is larger than Shelby County. Davidson County is growing. Now, you got a massive amount of black people down there. So what did the whites do in turn? They turned around and they demonized Memphis. See, out of all the 95 counties, all over Tennessee, Memphis is the most disliked county out of all them doggone counties. Why? Because it's basically black. Now, you mentioned black leaders down there. Now, you had those fours. You had them uptown, but now they're out. They're not even in the picture anymore. This is when the tide turned in Memphis when Harold Ford stormed the election commission. Well, here's the day with cheating, hiding ballots and stuff like that. Now, Davidson County, Nashville, the whole Davidson County, their population is booming. Now, going back to what St. Louis stated, listen, the more people you have, the more police you're going to need. You know?
Well,
the more paramedics you're going to need.
Sure.
You know?
Sure. Sure.
See? Now, those Fords down there in Memphis is what actually got the ball rolling down in Memphis, Tennessee. Even they had old Black Mayor, which he wasn't for nothing. You know, he was always talking about his degree, his PhD. So,
oh, man.
Can you, if you go to him and ask that doggone fool, so you so highly educated, you so smart, I tell you what, put an engine in my car with an object that's not mad. Well, shut the hell up. Let me be quiet.
Well, he's absolutely right. When you talk about in some of these areas, let's look at Chicago. In 36 days since the 31st of Memorial Day 2021, they only had 686 blacks shot by other blacks with 91 murders. In 36 days.
Yeah, okay.
Nashville is no better. Nashville is no better. Every time you turn your television on in the morning, somebody got shot up here. But yet and still, they don't talk about Nashville. It's always Memphis. You know? Now, look at Nashville. Again, you got different nationalities of people coming in here. It ain't just only blacks shooting up blacks. You got these Arabs and Kurdish and all these different people here. And guess what? Here in Davidson County, they still need more police. And refugees still coming in. Now what? Going back to you, St. Louis, what you said. No, you got to get some more police. The more people you got, the more police you need. Let me shut up.
Well, they ain't got the money to pay for them. The houses is tore up. They can't get no taxes off of them. Last year, between Memorial Day and ending, this Memorial Day made it 31st. Yeah, 4,845 blacks shot by other blacks and 745 murders. Yes, I said 4,845.
Have y'all thought about what the answer is? Because obviously we need to find
it.
Some parents say.
Let me answer. I'll answer your question.
Okay,
before you go off the air, it all starts at home.
Some parents just came up with an answer. You know what it is? When their kids walk to school, they have them walk in a single file line, and they make them run zigzag so they can't get hit by bullets. That's true. They run zigzag.
Is that the answer, though? You think that's the answer, I don't believe you think that's the answer.
Well, I'm not kidding. That's what they do now. I'm not kidding about that.
I've never seen it, so I'm not saying it is or not. But I'm asking you, do you think that is the answer? If we had to pull something out to implement, what would that be?
It was three women standing on the corner. That would be you, Reuben. That would be Reverend, the other Reverend. And our kids, like them. And a car drove by and shot all three of them. They was praying.
Yeah, I remember.
They was praying. And a car drove by and shot all three of them.
Right.
Oh.
Okay.
And see, here's the thing. Okay. When you don't have men in your country, if you don't have men in your country, men in your town and city and your neighborhood, then these damn thugs and that and criminal elements will run buck wild.
Yeah.
Well, okay, so Alcaz, I'm gonna go back to something you said. You said it starts at home. Now
exactly.
It seems to me that we've heard that before. We've heard that a lot. What is it about the average home then? Or is there a certain type of home out there? Or,
I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, I realize I'm picking at you now, but the truth is, you're right.
Hey,
you're absolutely
okay.
Right.
I mean, I can answer. You know, I mean, I can stand up to mine. I can answer. Let me tell you.
So, let me tell you.
You're absolutely right. I have four girls.
Okay.
And one boy.
Guess
what?
Okay. What's that?
I was there for one.
Okay.
I was there. Lunch, I wasn't there. But dinner and them books and them graduating high school, I was there.
Okay.
My wife was there.
Okay,
mm-hmm.
I got you.
Now, you got a lot of, as you know, I have an education. My wife has an education also. You got men and women going out there having these babies, uneducated. And just a dropout. Where does that leave a child? Come on now. St. Louis, talk to me.
Well, we got
child ain't no worse than theirs.
The child ain't up worse than them.
And you know, here's another thing too. And see, people get mad at me and call me all kind of names. If you want to teach critical race theory, talking about what the white man do and say, well, let's teach critical race theory and talk about what blacks do to conservative blacks that tell the truth. They call them all kind of names. Coons, Sambos, houses. Huh? No, let's teach that. Is that not critical race?
It was St. Louis.
Huh?
But now, listen, St. Louis. Hey, what you saying the truth? You know?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not a Republican, nor am I a Democrat. Because from my point of view, Republicans ride the bank and Democrats drive the getaway car. And I'm going to tell you something. When it comes to that, and then when it comes to this Republican and Democrat thing, the Democrats have did the blacks more harm than the Republicans have. When I read
And guess what?
All right.
They're talking about defunding the police. But let me tell you something. Now, this is the truth. In Minneapolis, on Chicago Avenue and 38th Street, where George Floyd was died, a black woman called the police because of domestic violence. Her black husband was beaten on her. The dispatcher told her, we can send the police down to 35th Street, but they're not coming up there to 38th Street. See, you won't defund the police, but the police say, we ain't coming up there because if we come up there, it's going to be a bunch of this, that, and the other. So you want to talk to the police, you got to walk down the 35th Street and talk to them.
Mm. Well, gentlemen, interesting stuff. Don, welcome.
Yes, sir. Well, y'all got me going. Same thing going on here in Selma. That ain't my identical thing. I seen a woman get whooped out in front of Raceway. Get whooped in a car. We call the police. The husband whooped upside the head outside in front of the pump, and the police watched. And after the police left, got in the car, and they left, and the man and woman, and they went home. Then 2 minutes later, four young men gets out of a Ford Bronco with AK-47s in their hand. So, it is what it is.
All right.
Just what it is. And, Mr. Doctor, I was going to tell you, too, Brother Baswell Bale, the Morris Science Temple of America, he spoke out against Black Lives Matter. He's saying the same thing you're saying. They need to sit down.
Blacks have been bamboozled again.
I don't do that, bro.
So, gentlemen, you all have put quite a bit on the floor. What I have not heard from you, let me challenge you all. What I haven't heard from you is the transformation. That's what I was looking for. Can y'all
economic
with that?
Well, I said debriefing. Uh-oh. I said debriefing.
Okay. Economic debriefing. Come on, St. Louis, give me something.
Well, here's the thing, too. You had the leader of the National Education Association said they will create a legal defense fund for any teacher that would teach critical race theory going against the school board.
Okay.
Now, okay. What does that tell them? They want to teach your kid a bunch of mess. It's not empowering them. It's creating further division, and it's lies. But you got that organization say, you teach the lies. You teach the lies. So where is black people in this?
Okay.
Why come they ain't standing up against them?
Because they don't know that they need to stand up. And then let's look at it like this. Who's teaching them? And they don't know how to do critical thinking. They don't know how to do psychoanalyzing. They don't know how. And who's really teaching them? I got a guy here doing research, and he's looking behind some of these professors, and they ain't who they say they are. So who are these professors?
They behind a dress, and they should be behind some pants, huh?
Some of that's going on, too.
Okay. Pastor, you still there? Pastor Wiley's still there? So, Don.
Huh?
You still there, Don? All right.
Yes, sir.
You said economics. Let's address it. Looks like we lost our question. Let's address that. Tell me how economics can come and save as a missing piece to the urban American puzzle. What will economics? Because you took people money, Don.
Mr. Dockery, they came in our neighborhood. I got one in front of me right now. I'm mom and them, and my sister Sherry and them. The Europeans came in our neighborhood and picked out some of the weakest women in our neighborhood when they had that guy working with Jesse doing that poor people's thing. No, my dad didn't agree with no poor people. My father, now guess what? He didn't agree with it, and then he started Organo Farm. And Mr. Dockery, I'm getting Acres USA, and I'm seeing some things now. Now guess what? They always come in our neighborhood, peek out the weak women in our neighborhood, and avoid the true issue. The true issue is,
right,
from a divine standpoint of view, it's Genesis 1:29 and Genesis 2:15.
Okay.
And guess what Mr. Dockery? Civil rights is not divine rights either. So I'm talking about divine rights, what God give us.
I get
all right?
I get
it. That's just bringing
so,
just that clear.
Let me get the takeaway here. So what I'm hearing you say is that there is a divine correlation to economic development and prosperity, right? And that if that
is
infused in urban American circumstances, that will transform it in a positive way. That, I don't want to put words
in. Yes, sir.
Is that a, you know, what you're saying?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. I was just
okay.
I was going over because my brothers just came down here from the Morris Science Temple of America, and they did a piece on the you can go on YouTube, called a Mexican, and they talk about divine rights and civil rights. So when they talked about it, and being the oldest son who I am, and then I got to thinking about it. I got a divine right to go to work in the system. I got a divine right to make the money out of the system and start me a financial institution. I have a divine right.
Right. Right.
God gave me that divine right.
Okay. So if we had to take some young person that was wayward, right, ill-informed, and going down a primrose path to destruction, God, how can we calmly, rationally, right, and in a healthy way, take this idea that you're talking about, and now do we have to pull them away from the environment first, or can we just throw it in there and automatically it'll mix up like Kool-Aid and sugar and water? How does it talk to me? That's what I'm asking.
From a clinical standpoint of view, Mr. Doctor, you're right. Our people, a lot of our young men need to be taken away from this system and deprogrammed. I got my baby son, I'm seeing that just right now. You know, he ain't been around me because his mama's off in some crazy stuff. But when I listened to his message on his phone, it let me know that his mama got him off in the mess. No, he needs to be taken away from mama from a while at 12 years old, brought around some roosters so he can hear some roosters crow. He don't need to be around the hens right now.
The roosters crow.
Yeah, he need to know how to roost a crow. You don't need to be around a hen and let the hen teach them how to cackle.
All right. How helpful do you think that is, St. Louis? We know what the problem is. We see the problem, and we can't deny it.
Some of these women take out on their husbands through their kids, through their sons.
Okay, that has happened.
Hey, I seen a little Mimi, a little black baby, was sitting in his pumpkin and sitting in his chair, and he looked up his shoulder. Here coming a black man, and she started crying. And the caption read, "This is the third stepdaddy in 30 days."
Okay.
The baby started crying when she seen him. Here come another one. You got some behavior that is just totally dysfunctional. And it breeds dysfunction. I don't know how you stop that, Reuben. I really don't.
Okay. I appreciate that. I have a theory. I do have a theory. And it is what you're saying, there's evidence behind what you gentlemen are saying, right? One of the reasons why it's hard for people to embrace and accept it is because it's easier to point out the bad and the negative, but what you don't hear enough of are palatable solutions. And the reality is, Don, and I can speak from that experience, that unless we're willing to change our course of action, man, nothing good is going to help come for us. And nobody's going to bring that for you. I remember how many people, my mom, my dad, and other relatives, were really happy that President Obama was running. And they were just elated when he won, right? But in reality, that was never going to fix their individual circumstance. And that's what has come out over time, right? Now, what I would argue is that he was just one of 40, now six presidents, right? And history is going to tell about what happened to a certain segment or population or subgroup of people. And I believe the real deal is based on what they did for themselves, not so much what the president did or the president said in any of their administrations. Now, I will give credit where credit is due. There were a lot of policies in this last administration that were pro and friendly to minority opportunities for self-determination economically and upliftment. And I said this the other night, I hope they don't go away, but it is what it is. And so rather than being ready to just continue to lay the truth of blame, where do we find opportunity to embrace, to educate? Now, Doug, you was talking about down there in Selma, that they're doing the same thing down there. Is that what I heard you say? They're doing the same thing.
Yes, sir.
St. Louis. Now, Selma is a historic city. Isn't it referred to as the Queen City? Did I hear that somewhere?
Yes, sir, it is. Like Nash is Athens of the South, Selma's the Queen City. That's right.
Why do they call it Queen City? And I'm going somewhere. I'm just bear with me here. Why do they call it the Queen City? Don?
Mr. Dockery, if you like, why do they call Nashville Athens of the South? And Mr. Docker, why do they call your brotherhood Helena? We in the South, and the South represent that Hellenistic type culture. And we as people that been brought here from the motherland, we have to understand that they are teaching their people and teaching us a Hellenistic Greek Roman type style of government and culture here. See what I'm saying? And now we have to understand that we have to enhance our own culture. You know, it was, Mr. Doc, you know what really blows my mind right now? Somebody put on the YouTube the 10 tribes that we came from Africa. So how many people in our community is going to trace their DNA back to these 10 tribes? And who going to go get the resources for us to do that? Because the government got resources.
who wants to do that? Who's interested in doing that, Don? That's a whole nother question. That's a whole nother question. We got Peoria, Illinois, John, Mama D there. Welcome, Mama D. We're talking from the topic, the missing piece of the urban American puzzle. I thought I was hearing some positive things about some solutions, some policy things that we can do. Don is saying by teaching and encouraging economic development, that's a big thing. Don, I said that when I ran for public office, that when we talk about affordable housing and we talk about equal pay and things of that nature, the best way to achieve that is to empower people to develop their own businesses and to be economically independent and viable. So I would agree with you in that regard.
And Mr. Docker, you know what's really saying? I was going to say to you, down here in Dallas County, you got four major high schools, and don't none of them teach these young brothers of African descent or Moorish descent or whatever you want. Nobody's teaching them to frame houses. It's sad.
Okay.
You got a public school system down here. I'm teaching the boys nothing.
Yeah. But what could happen, though, is some church or group of organizations or people who are interested in that, guess what they can do? They can create their own training program. Right, Don?
I guess they can, Mr. Doctor. They need to because it's not happening. That's the reason this murder is going on in Dallas County. I guarantee you, if I go to any one of these high schools, there's no building program. Now, if I came up there where you at, Mr. Doctor, and I go out around them surrounding counties to some of them good old boy counties, I bet you the good old boys teaching their sons how to build. And I bet you them good old boys that's learning in these surrounding counties in high school learn to build or come right up there on Bradley Parkway where concrete form right there. And they'll be building all around that 840 together and in harmony.
I heard you say, give me one second. I heard you say, Don, that there are some individuals down there that are focusing on some things. And I just like to suggest that that may be one construct that they might consider doing something like that. Go ahead, St. Louis.
Well, remind me of the meeting the black man was at. Had about 40 people up in there, 40 blacks, and they were talking about how whites are dying out. They ain't going to be the majority in Missouri, I mean, in the country here pretty soon. They're going to be a minority. We set the time for the next meeting next month. They came back next month. It was 10 of them in there, and they was talking about the same thing. Set the meeting time for the next month. They came back the next month. It was two of them. Talking about the same thing. Well, hell, they don't kill up each other, and they talking about whites ain't going to be around.
Okay. And that's a bad thing. That doesn't sound good.
Well, that's what the conversation is about. And the reality is.
Oh, go ahead.
That's it.
Okay. All right. Well, I was just going to say that we have, look like Josh is joining us here from Murfreesboro 3369. But before we go to you, Josh, let me recognize 8112. Would you like to say anything, ma'am, before we move any further? Don't want to overlook you there.
Oh,
okay.
No,
thanks for joining us. All right. Thanks for joining us. And to the listening audience, I promise I'm going to offer some proactive things that may serve as a piece. Now, it's no good. It's just conversation for me. But it only works if people who are interested in it makes it work. So, but Josh, welcome, my friend. We're talking from the topic, the missing piece of the urban American puzzle. Any question or comment so far, Brother Josh?
Not yet.
Okay. All right. Good. Just hang tight right there. So one of the things that when we talk about this puzzle, and you all know what a puzzle is, some people would consider it to be a game. Some people consider it to be a hobby or something that keeps you busy, like as you take an instrument that has been intentionally cut apart, right, and there are key pieces that match up and fit right in with one another. That's the perfect recipe for unity because my family and I, my children, my wife and I, as they were growing up, that was one of the things we did as a family activity. And my daughter and my wife had become very crafty at starting out finding certain pieces that made Don the periphery of the puzzle, right? And then they got wise about identifying other centerpieces, putting them together first, and then they began to feel it. They got real, I mean, I'm telling you, they're pretty good with it. They're pretty good with that thing. And within a good day or so, they can get a big 1,000-piece puzzle put together, sometimes quicker than that. But we're talking about the missing pieces of urban. There's a lot of good things, a lot of good features, a lot of good parts that exist in urban America. And if we can tap into that some kind of way and find a strategy to bring the good pieces together, we got some bad pieces. Some of them are lost, done, St. Louis. Some of them are lost, admittedly. But if we can find the good pieces, and maybe we have to reshape in the empty spot and find a replacement. Would that be unfair? If we did that, we start replacing old pieces of the original puzzle?
I didn't say that.
Josh, would that be unfair? In your view?
No, I don't think so.
Okay. But someone would argue then, Josh, if you get rid of the original pieces, that's not right for them because they may come back one day and they want to fit right into the puzzle that they were cut out of. But then you want to put some new piece in there. Where do they go then? Talk to me
somebody. That's all. But I think every child has that unique gift. And if they tap into that unique gift, I think every child that we have accepted in this nation would be so better off, if you get what I'm saying.
I think I'm following your logic there. I think I am. But let me get some help, Josh. Pastor Wally, you there?
Can you hear me? Yeah, I am. I was just sitting here thinking about the thing. And I hear Brother Josh. I want to thank God for Brother Josh for always seeking a solution about things. And I was just thinking about some of the things that was mentioned a little earlier, if you will. And then I can get right back to what Josh was talking about. I want to say why I was on my mind. They're talking about how people were skilled in a certain area in a span of a small amount of time, I guess. Could I get the person who said that to say how many people it was and, was shot in there, how many was killed in a substantial amount of time? I don't know if it was the last month or two, something like that. Can you kind of help me with that? Because I wanted to hear that. Again, because to be able to keep up with things like that, and then that may be a solution that a person has, but if I don't have no concerns about what's going on, what good is the solution if I'm not going to utilize it? So I'm wondering now, what was said about how many people it was? Do you remember what it was, Pastor Doc, the amount that was mentioned earlier?
No, I think it was St. Louis that gave that there in Chicago. And you want to reiterate, how many was that in
about 636 in 35 days and 91 murdered.
636 in 35 days that was shot. And how many murdered?
91.
91 murder. Okay, now.
That's since Memorial Day, since June the 1st.
Since June the 1st, okay. That's like, 30-some days ago. Okay, now, the reason why I wanted to bring that up And then somebody came back with saying about how many killings was in Memphis, but Nashville is going on and they're not talking about it or something like that. Well, I'm in an area right now, okay, for the last, I would say almost a month, something like that, I've been posted up right here. And even though there may be a lot of shooting and killing in Nashville, I don't know, but right here on the block where I'm at, you know, I'm thankful to know that, just thinking somebody was on the, in those areas. Now, I don't live on this corner.
Okay.
But I come out on purpose. I come out here on purpose, and I wonder if people would do that in all of those areas. I wonder how many people would be, like, free from that, even though they may have that kind of mentality, but they just may respect the presence of people that are concerned. Yeah, I'm not saying these people out here don't have the guns, because I believe they do, and they have, probably have some really, high-tech guns. I don't know, but I don't see them around here shooting up everybody right here where I'm at. Now, they could be doing it on the other side of town, but I'm grateful. I just needed to hear that. So now it makes me, should I run from the possibility that it's getting ready to happen, or should I stay with it and see if we can continue to have someone to be concerned? We got to get out of the buildings, man. That's what I believe. Now, I don't know
what
you come up with. I hadn't been up there. What would you say if we had a solution? Should we hold on to it, or should we get out there?
If
we're concerned.
If
we're concerned. Huh?
You said it best. If you're not going to do nothing with it, keep it to yourself. It ain't helping.
Not going to do nothing with it, keep it to yourself. Yeah, because that hurts. You have to know. If there's a solution, let's put the solution out there. And, you know, maybe that'll help because just to keep up with the statistics of it, man, I mean, that right there, if that don't hurt you, that hurt me just to hear it. You know what I mean? I'm like, man, I'm just way over here. I appreciate him sharing it, though. At least I know that it's actually happening. But we just need to get out of the building. I just think that we need to get out of the building. If we got the solutions, let's get out of the buildings and let people know that we do care. I think that might be
That's
what I would
say. All right. Sounds good. St. Louis, you were trying to say something, and then we'll go to...
It has nothing to do with guns. Because you had the homie over in West Africa, when the king died, they killed 1,000 sacrificed to go, so their spirit could go along with his. They had no guns.
Okay.
What you talking about is human beings.
Yeah, I just wanted to make sure, because you're talking about people that was, you know, gunned down or stabbed or however they was killed in Chicago. You were saying shootings, and then X amount of murder. So
some people want to blame that on guns.
They blame it on guns? Oh, you said they blame it on guns.
Yeah. If that's the case, we better be ducking every place we go. We walk by a gun shop, the guns may jump out on the sidewalk and start shooting at you.
But if somebody was out there, you think they'd just be shooting like that? Is what you're saying?
That's what they're doing. Like I told Ruben earlier, you had three black women there in Chicago praying in a neighborhood on the corner, and somebody drove by and shot all three of them.
Say people was on the corner praying, because I know you mentioned me earlier, that preacher you were talking about, the other preacher, and I think you was including me. But
I said, if you, Ruben,
you didn't say nothing about you being out there, though. See, if you had said,
I ain't gonna be out there.
That's what I'm telling you. That means you don't care. That's what you're saying.
I do care. I do care.
But you shouldn't.
No, I do care.
You shouldn't have mentioned me. You understand what I'm saying? So it's all right for me to be out there, no matter what happens.
Well, I never mentioned your name.
No, the other preacher. I know you were talking about me, but that's all right.
Well, who? You ain't the only preacher that be on here.
Let me ask you something, St. Louis. Let me ask you something. Didn't you just get through saying that you wasn't going to be out there no kind of way?
You know I'm not going to be out there. That's why come I care.
Okay, that's what I'm saying. You said that
you said I didn't
there.
Care. I told you I do care. That's why I'm not going
to
be out there.
What's the use of mentioning how many people got killed? What good is that if you didn't care?
Because nobody else mentions it.
Oh, okay. I see. I got you.
You got a state. You got a city that's got a black mayor and a black police chief. You got the state where the second in power in the state of Illinois is a black female lieutenant governor. You got the head police officer in the state is attorney general. You got the secretary of state is a black person. That's what you have. So apparently they don't care neither.
All right. So I appreciate that. I appreciate it. Let me open the floor back up here. And what we're speaking about is the missing piece of the urban American puzzle. I'm going to go ahead and offer some suggestions here. The fact that of the matter is that if one lives in a certain area, in a neighborhood, in a community, on a block, you have every right to keep it safe, to clean it up, and engage with your neighbors, right, to unify yourself. That's one thing. Certainly, if we can find ourselves taking advantage of resources and opportunities to enrich people's lives through knowledge, through practical experiences and things of that nature, even if you're not someone that's been to college, you still have self-worth. There are opportunities for you to grow and develop and to contribute to your community, right? Those are some of the things. Now, we understand that I'm convinced as a student of history and a social scientist that there is an element of social engineering here and control that is at play. And understanding that, the reverse of that is not making yourself available to that experiment. And unfortunately, we were talking earlier about how there are older people who have lived lives and haven't accomplished much. They tend to pass that anger and that frustration, Josh, on to younger people so that they can relive that in their generation. And I don't know that that's the best thing for them, right? If I'm old, I miss my opportunity. If I can't tell some young person how to do better than I did, maybe I shouldn't bother them at all, right? Because they can do bad all by themselves. And so when we talk about policy solutions, education is a good thing. Don said something that was powerful, economic development, revitalization of the family unit, having fathers return home to children and establish themselves as voices of authority, as loving figures. I'm not just talking about a pair of britches in a pants. I'm talking about a man and a father who establish discipline and structure for their children, for their family. Those are all things that can help. Those are missing pieces in urban America. Now, let's be honest. Urban America is changing every day because of gentrification. Where do those people go and have their problems been resolved? See, what you do is you just shift the problem from one place to another. So when we begin to address it where it is, we call it out. That's the rough part about it. Some people don't like to hear the reality spoken. But the truth of the matter is you can't solve a problem until you embrace it, you recognize it, you acknowledge it. And that's where the work is. A lot of times it's hard work, and people just throw their hands up and walk away from it, you know. But, Josh, I'm curious to know, based on the dialogue you just heard, where are you at with that, little brother? What's your thought on that? And, 12, we haven't forgot about you. Phil Peter, and his... Go ahead, Josh.
I think that you can try your best to succeed in those types of areas. And now a lot of parents have succeeded in more than since I've been alive. But we can do better, I think.
Okay.
We can always do better.
Sure.
Mr. Doctor.
Sure. Yes, sir. Go ahead, doctor.
I'm going to say something to the brothers. I want y'all to listen to me good. You mentioned gentrification. I'm going to say it. I call it gerrymandering, and it's named after Eldridge Gerald. Eldridge Gerald was a Scottish Rite Mason from the north. Okay, so they gerrymandered in our community, and at the same time, they're throwing illicit drugs in our community to keep us off balance. And at the same time, Mr. Dockery, I'm getting data. I don't care if they're Democrat or Republican president. If they do any kind of diplomatic position towards China or Russia, Great Britain goes to showing out. Or this Scottish Rite Lodge that we have in our community that's behind the gerrymandering and the pouring of drugs in our community is tied in with the British. So we as brothers, how do we deal with that European lay that's in Europe and now with inside the United States within our community? How do we deal with those European males that has that thought process in their head?
Well, here's the, can I start with this, son? They don't control you. They have no power over you. You have power over yourself. Now, when if you're in that area, it seems to me the first thing you do is to move out of it and go somewhere, establish someplace for you to house your values, your interests, and your concerns. That's the first step. They're done. Now, if they come where you went to establish yourself, you have every right to defend that. But just to say that, if you know, it's kind of like me going to someone and asking to eat out of their hand and then get mad at them when everything runs out of the hand I ate out of. First of all, I need to go get my own. Is that right, 8112?
Yes, sir. I agree
as well, and I just want to make this comment real quick here. The missing piece to me is trust. Trust is vital. And when people cannot, for whatever the reasons is, trust.
Yes, ma'am.
It's always going to be a problem. I don't care if it's your parents. I don't care if it's your school teachers, your brothers, your sisters. If they can't trust, it's a problem.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's hard to see that trust. So now we have a problem. As you speak of the solution, you have to regain trust.
Okay. That's been eroded over the years so much that you're right. You can have a lot of good things, well, and try to bring them to the floor for people, but unless they trust themselves first and then one another, it may go to spoil. But, wow, that's a powerful point that you make there. That's a very powerful point. Josh, were you trying to say something?
Yes, I was. After she was done. But it's all about them. It's if they don't get married, that's their business, and they shouldn't have gotten that thing. If they do get married and stuff like that, and then get a house, that's their business, and nobody else should say nada.
Nada.
Okay. So both ways, nobody should say nada.
Hmm.
Although, in this country, at one time, we were supposed to say something.
Hmm.
But now, it's like we can't say anything.
Who's stopping us, Josh? Who's stopping you from speaking your mind, speaking your peace, and being heard in society? Who's stopping it? Josh?
The government.
What?
I think it is the government.
Huh. Okay, that's interesting. Josh, I thought the First Amendment allows every citizen the right to free speech, expression, and religion.
But it also says another on it backs down what you just said.
What?
It backs down what you just said.
Well, that's what the Constitution says, Josh.
Yeah, but there's another Constitution that says that you can say your peace and be gone if you want to.
I'm sorry, go ahead, Josh, finish, and then I want to go to back some. Okay. I want to speak to something that 8112 said that was very meaningful, and that is the relationship of trust in a neighborhood. I remember growing up when you could have a dispute with a neighbor, a member of your neighborhood, and maybe, as young folk did, we came to fisticuffs, right? The next day, we were back out there laughing and frolicking with one another, right? Mm-hmm. But somehow, even that trust left because people got so vicious. They got so vile in their actions. And really, there is a need within urban American neighborhoods and communities and certain sectors of the country to really start teaching about being humane and having a common sense of identity as a people that share the same space. And I think that will go a long way well to rebuilding the trust system. Some people think that we should strive to have full harmony among different ethnicities and what have you. That's good, but if you can't trust yourself in the mirror and your brother that lives next door to you, how do you think you're going to go somewhere else to be able to trust? I mean, it just doesn't seem too practical or realistic.
And when you have negative people speaking out against the ones that are trying to do the best they can, this is a problem that's been ongoing for so many years. And it may continue. And as others used to fight for the right for us to even be able to do a lot of things we are able to do today. So when you have negativity speaking out against that, there's killings everywhere, including where he lives at.
Yep.
It's all over the world. It's a horrible thing. By all means, I never understand why people are doing such things to each other and most of them are the young generation.
Yeah.
Genociding themselves. And it's when what they're not doing, then they got people, I'm going to say, quote, unquote, of authority doing it to them. Everybody's afraid. The kids are afraid. The good cops are afraid. The bad cops making the good cops look bad. It's just a, seem like a damn if I do and a dang if I don't. But as Pastor Waller spoke out, there's people out here, and no matter what corner they stand on, God got them. They watching them, and they protecting them to keep his word going on, because there's so many others trying to strip that.
Yes, it's so true. Well said.
Well, you know another thing, too, Reuben, is that people continue to subscribe to the same old method, like you may mention about other ethnicities, other ethnic groups. Well, that reality exists in what you call black today. All blacks don't have the same culture in this country. There's differences. Those differences follow religious, economic, and social lines.
Okay.
All blacks don't agree with what you hear or see portrayed in the news. They don't agree to that.
That's true.
And then when you try to bring people together, that's because they got a similar skin color. Well, that just ain't going to work.
Okay. Well, I can see what you mean in terms of if people don't have share, that's what I was making reference to when I was coming in on 12. If people don't share a common set of values, you're right. And it is true that Negro, black, and color folk are not monolithic. In other words, everybody don't think, act, and see the same way. And that's perfectly fine. But in your neighborhood, when you're looking out for your property, looking out for your neighbor's property, your children, your neighbor's children, it seems to me that that would be the thing that would want everybody to have a shared value there.
Well, yeah, in that particular neighborhood. That particular neighborhood, I would agree with you. But there's other neighborhoods where people don't look at, blacks don't look at things that way. And no one wants to recognize that.
Well, that's the truth.
There's blacks that don't want to have nothing to do with no George Floyd. Nothing to do with no Breonna Taylor. Don't want to have nothing to do with some of these bills that Biden is pushing. But people, then, like I told you earlier and told the other guy, they called all kind of names. That should be the history, because if you're going to tell a history about how whites treated you, well, you got to tell the history how blacks treated you, because you don't think like them.
I see. Okay. It's not our intention to really address what we see in terms of these manifestations of late. I believe that what's more important to St. Louis and what would be useful to us is the bigger picture, and that is understanding what's missing. And I think 12 hit it on the head. Trust is missing. It's interesting. I know of some individuals who are white who moved into a gentrifying, not fully gentrified yet, but a gentrifying area. And they're concerned with how is it then that we can live peacefully with these people. And the reality is that many of those people had a hard time, not all of them, not everybody, but many of them were concerned about the peace and harmony and safety before they came. You understand what I'm saying?
Politics calls. See, here's the thing. Black politics does a trip on them.
Okay.
See, it's one thing when you listen to black politicians talk, undefensively, they would tell you what they don't want to see. They want to keep all them kids in their public school. They don't want blacks to be able to take their kids out and go someplace else, because you got blacks that benefit from being employed in them school districts, no matter if the kids don't learn. And data shows what? Data shows they not learning. They the last.
I'll say this. We don't need no black or white politicians. We need advocates for people. Let the politicians.
Well, that's a good point. Then you got those that talk about equity. They talk about the disparity in equity. You know, when you look at the black jobs as reported in 2015 in occupations that they were in, 19.6% was in social workers.
Okay.
You know how many scientists and engineers that there were? 4.3% was in engineering.
Right.
Science and engineering-related occupations, 6.5%. What percentage do they make up in the population? 11, 12, 13%. And you have twice that number percentage in social workers who probably make $30,000 a year. So if you got a predominant number of your people working in those low-paying areas, how are you going to ever have get out of a disparity in equity? You can't.
I think that's a worthy conversation to have about how people can rethink the, you know, opportunities and taking advantage of it. You know, that's a worthy conversation.
If your children aren't getting educated, how are they going to qualify for those positions?
Sure. So we have, as parents, we
Pastor,
have to
may
take
I say
the
something, please?
Yes, ma'am. What?
For a person that says they care, but they only care enough to stay out of the situation, meaning they're not willing to put forth that effort to find a better way for the underdog. Let me put it like maybe that's what I should say. In the predominantly bad areas and things.
Mm-hmm.
So I agree with the fact that if you are not willing to help me, help us, then I don't trust you enough. Whether you say you care, that's just opening your mouth or not.
Mm-hmm.
So without me trusting you once again, as I said, I'm not listening to you. Point blank.
Okay.
And that's the way a lot of people in different areas feel. If I can't trust in you,
mm-hmm.
what you say goes over my head. Because you're looking down on me, number one, while you're speaking to me as a person. And when you speak to someone, you're supposed to look them in their eye. You don't look down on anyone. I don't care what they have and do not have.
Okay.
Because sometimes a lot of people that have the most is the very one that won't help you. And it may only take a little things. Everybody that comes from certain areas or that's a word that I don't like using, black, quote unquote, don't make them bad people because of their life situations. Don't make them ignorant nor dumb.
Right.
Sometimes they may fall to the wayside at times. I've seen people fall to the wayside and get and pick themselves up and still come back and touch where they touched solid soil from birth on up. And they'll come inside to still help their community.
Sure.
That where they came from is what I'm speaking of.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah.
Reuben.
Okay. Oh, man.
What did Moses ask the Pharaoh when he went to him?
Hold on one second.
Josh, let me give Josh, and I'll come back to you. Josh,
that lady now just said some powerful words. She says that he or she can come back up. That means she's or he's down. She comes back up.
Okay.
That means
okay.
She's down in the dump. She is all the way. She's terminal. She
yeah.
doesn't know what to do. But
okay.
now, all of a sudden, she does know what to do. That is so powerful.
Sure. That's really related to Job 14:7 that I read about a tree being cut down by the root, that there's hope that that tree will sprout again, and the tender branches thereof will not wither. That's what Job 14:7 says, and we led with that tonight. So, Josh, thank you for bringing that out. Our time is getting away from us. St. Louis, you want to ask a question right quickly, and then we'll go.
Well, I was
going
to ask you, when Moses went to the Pharaoh, what did he ask the Pharaoh to do?
Or he told him that he was to let his people go, if I understand.
Let my people go.
Right.
So when you
right.
go down into them areas and you go to them public schools,
okay,
they won't let you have access to talking to those kids in a setting.
Okay.
Nor will they subscribe to the programs that you try to introduce to the school district that you know is future demand to prepare the students.
Okay.
So they are the Pharaoh that's holding those kids of Israel. And they're benefiting off of them. And they won't let them go because they got politics. What did the teacher head of the teachers union say the other day? Say, we have a defense fund to defend teachers who would go against a school district that tells them not to teach a certain thing and teach it anyway.
Let me just say this thing, as I take your point.
You got to go in.
When taxpayers take their money from school districts, that may change a lot of that. When they start voting some of those clowns out, that may change a lot of that. But I'll leave that right there. Let's go around, get a final thought from everybody. We got about 6 minutes here. To wrap up our show tonight, we've been talking from the topic, the missing piece of the urban American puzzle. Josh, give it 30 seconds right quickly, and then we'll go to 12.
It was a nice show today.
Well, I'm glad you approved. Thank you. We're glad to have you. All right, well, 12, final thoughts there. Thank you for sharing with us tonight.
Yes, once again, to me, the missing piece is trust. You guys be safe. Love you very much. And thanks for having me on the show once again.
Absolutely. Our pleasure. Okay, St. Louis, here's the final thought.
8112.
Well,
good to hear you.
I was going to say this.
All right.
When a family decides on where to live, where to buy a home and live, one of the key components is the schools, because they want to raise children and want their children to go to schools that are substantial. They ain't going to move down in the hood because the schools, that's one reason the schools are terrible. If they're professionals, they surely not. In Ferguson, Missouri, you got families there that have been there a long time.
Okay.
And after Mike Brown, they fled Ferguson. These black families. You know where they fled? They fled across the Mississippi River. No, I'm sorry, the Missouri River. Into St. Charles County. And counties like Wentzville, where the population is 98% white. And the police department is all white. So it's not whites that they're running from. It's not white police that they was scared of, because if that was the case, they wouldn't be running to that type of dynamics. It was them others. Talk to you later.
Thank you for joining us tonight. All right. Pastor Wiley, we turn the floor over to you to wrap us up for our conversation on Talk Straight here tonight. Our topic has been the missing piece of the urban American culture. You are the missing piece. You are the missing piece. You're in place. You can fill the puzzle. All right, Pastor Wiley.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's a great opportunity to acknowledge the one who made this day, man. So I want to thank God for him giving us a chance to assemble again. And for those who may or may not understand the power of the Word of God. And I think that he wants me to be mindful at all times, Pastor Doctor. So I have to say this. Do not misuse the Word of God. And that's one of the things that I appreciate about the Lord when he says, in all of your ways, acknowledge him, and he shall direct you to your path. I can't say I trust him on one end, and then on the other end, I don't. That's a confused individual. So you before him or you're against him. And I like that when he said that. And I know I wasn't always with him, but I thank God that he changed my direction. So I want to take what 8112 said, Pastor Doctor. And she made mention about trust. And trust has value. That's why he says trust in the Lord. It's written in the scripture with all your heart. And so, and lean not to your own understanding. So once we get the trust in him, then we can work things out, because there's nothing too hard for him. I yield back to you on that note. That's the doctrine.
Nothing too hard for him. Nothing too hard for God. All right. We appreciate that. And as we wrap up tonight, we're grateful for our co-host, Pastor Wallen, and all of those that have joined us here. We'll be back next week, Lord willing, for another episode of Talk Straight, 7 o'clock p.m. Join us then, and we will see you then. All right. Great.